Hello everybody and welcome to this week's recording of the Wallingford and District Talking Newspaper. We're reading articles from the Wallingford Herald published on Wednesday the 4th of March 2026. In addition to the Wallingford Herald articles, following those at the end of the recording, you'll find some choice articles from the monthly magazines, as well as our What's On section. And we have a clip from a new series of articles we're going to include about oral history of people in the area. You'll have to enjoy as well. So our three readers are Hugh Roderick, Jill Davies and Pat Hayton. The copier is Helen King and the producer is myself, Lawrence.
Hello, I'm Jill. Volunteers sought as flood warden scheme extended. Volunteers are being sought to help their communities understand flood risks and responsibilities by becoming flood wardens. Oxfordshire County Council has extended its flood warden scheme to cover the entire county following successful pilots in several towns, including Witney and Abingdon. Flood wardens help identify and report blocked drains and ditches to reduce the risk of flooding. Judy Roberts, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Place, Environment and Climate Action, said, "Flood wardens are our eyes and ears on the ground and report things like blocked ditches and drains so that we can resolve these issues before a flood event can occur. As extreme weather becomes a more common occurrence, their role becomes so much more important. We are so grateful to all the county's volunteers whose hard work and local knowledge does so much to keep their communities safe. I would like to thank our existing flood wardens for their efforts and invite more people to join them in improving the situation in the places where they live." Flood wardens can be individuals, parish council representatives or volunteers already involved in community resilience schemes. William Waring, chairman and trustee of the Witney Flood Group, has served as a flood warden since April 2023 and coordinates the town's team of seven wardens. Mr. Waring said, "My home was flooded in 2007 and 2020. Although I have since moved to a safer location, I feel passionate about making a difference to others who are unable to move out of the high flood risk zone. Ultimately, the Flood Wardens Project is another piece of the puzzle in the solutions we seek to reduce the risk of flooding in the area. The scheme is designed to be flexible with no fixed time commitments. Wardens can contribute as much or as little time as they are able. The County Council provides training and ongoing support." Describing the work in Witney, Mr. Waring added, "We engage with the community, report issues to the responsible authorities and create community emergency flood plans to keep in touch with each other and support each other. My role involves coordinating our wardens, increasing their knowledge and expertise, and making sure that specific high-risk locations are the priority and making them known to the community. Our flood wardens attend public events, learn about river management, hold conversations with both the responsible authorities and our residents and business owners. The council will support wardens in their role and provide necessary training. All wardens undergo an informal one-hour call prior to signing any agreement to help them understand their role in more detail."
Hello, this is Pat. Villagers alarm as work begins at reservoir site. Villagers expressed their alarm as Thames Water contractors were spotted preparing for a massive new reservoir near Abingdon. Households in Drayton, near Abingdon, shared their concerns as they saw Thames Water workers working in a field near the village. Diane Dunstan, who lives in Steventon Road, saw the workers putting cones out and power harrowing, an intensive tractor-driven soil cultivation technique in the area. She and her husband both had concerns for local wildlife and said that they thought that it was preliminary work for the company's massive new reservoir, recently named the White Horse Reservoir, which they are against. Ms Dunstan told Thames Water, "We do not want your reservoir anywhere near here." The controversial 150 billion litre scheme would be south-west of Abingdon and reach to Grove, securing water supply for 15 million people, including Thames Water, Affinity Water and Southern Water customers. Consultation with residents started in October and concluded in January. In response to the Drayton villagers' concerns, Thames Water confirmed that ploughing had taken place on the field. This is in advance of archaeological investigations that are required ahead of applying for development consent for the proposed reservoir. The company added that the work is similar to agricultural activity that has been taking place on the field historically and that it was done outside of bird nesting season so as to remove risk of disturbance. A spokesperson said ploughing has been taking place on a field owned by Thames Water where ground investigations will be taking place as part of archaeological assessments. Comprehensive measures are in place to protect ecology during the ploughing, and these measures have been prepared and monitored by an on-site ecology team. This includes protection of existing field margins and hedgerows so that ecological habitats are not disturbed and wildlife not deterred from their existing habitats. This is part of ongoing land management taking place on Thames Water-owned sites. There has been consistent opposition to the development, which will be as large as Gatwick Airport, from campaigner GARD Group Against Reservoir Development councillors and MPs. Vale Council leaders have objected to the consultation in the consultation and reaffirmed the Council's objection to the reservoir in a formal letter to the Secretary of State for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. The letter has called for urgent action on the controversial plans and in particular concerns about spiralling costs, flawed assumptions and the failure to properly consider alternative solutions. Thames Water has launched a 5.7 billion tender notice for the newly named Whitehorse Reservoir, which is expected to create 1,800 construction jobs. It was previously named South East Strategic Reservoir Option. There is an artist impression of the finished reservoir and a cheerful picture of MP Leila Moran to accompany the article.
This is Hugh. Lloyds clarify branch closure after confusion. There has been an update on a Lloyds Didcot branch closure amid confusion within the local community. Previously, it had been reported the Lloyds Bank branch in Didcot would close on June the 24th, although the business did say that date was subject to change. Over the past week, reports emerged on local social media groups that the closure would be earlier, causing some confusion. Now, Lloyds has confirmed the branch will shut, but in a year's time, on March the 17th, 2027, after an independent industry assessment by Link, the UK's main ATM network, recommended a new banking hub on the site. A Lloyds spokesperson said, "Customers want the freedom to bank in the way that works for them, and we offer more choice and ways to manage money than ever before. In addition to our app, customers can visit the local post office or the new banking hub in Didcot once it's up and running. Customers can also use any branch of Lloyds or Halifax and can deposit cash at Paypoint locations. We're giving our customers the flexibility to bank wherever and whenever they need us. The banking hub set to replace the Lloyds branch will have a traditional banking counter run by the post office, where customers of main UK banks can deposit and withdraw cash and check balances."
Garage incident arrests. Arrests have been made after an alleged burglary at an Oxfordshire Town's Esso petrol garage. two people have been taken into police custody after a suspected burglary at the Esso station in Station Road in Wallingford on Wednesday, February the 18th. According to Thames Valley Police, a man from Wallingford, whose age has not been disclosed, has been released without a charge, while another, a 34-year-old from Didcot, has been released on bail. Anyone with information or footage should contact the force on 101 or via the website, quoting investigation number 4326-008187.
This article comes with a good picture of DJ Richard Strange in his Art Centre shop. DJ Richard Strange is continuing to keep vinyl record collectors in South Oxfordshire well supplied with their favourite tunes. Mr. Strange ran Music Box Record Store in Wallingford until it closed in 2019 due to tough trading conditions. In recent years, he has been running a pop-up record store at the Cornerstone Arts Centre in Didcot. To take advantage of the vinyl revival, a growing trend in music fans to choose to buy vinyl records instead of downloading songs. The pop-up record store at the Arts Centre usually runs on the last Saturday of the month. Following his years as a record shop boss, Mr. Strange has retained thousands of albums and singles as stock and bring loads of them along to the monthly pop-up. He also has regular slots as a DJ at the Dolphin Pub in Wallingford. A spokesperson for the Music Box says Richard's passion for a good tune is infectious. If it's round and fits on a turntable, he'll play it. You can tune into his regular radio show on Wallingford Radio, and you will often see him loitering around Cornerstone in Didcot by day.
More than £1.5 million in grants up for grabs. More than £1.5 million in grants is up for grabs. The funding is available to community groups and non-profit organisations across South Oxfordshire over the next year through a series of schemes funded by South Oxfordshire District Council. Councillor Georgina Heritage, Cabinet Member for Communities at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "It was very important to us as a council that as part of this year's budget, we were able to continue to support community and non-profit organisations across the district and putting people first. These groups carry out vital work to support the vulnerable and most in need in South Oxfordshire and on projects that help our natural environment to thrive. The funding, announced as part of the Council's February the 12th budget, will support projects that improve community facilities, promote health and well-being, and advance climate action across the district. Schemes include the Everyone Active Grant, £50,000, Capital Grant Scheme, £320,000, Performing Arts Grant Scheme, £60,000, Councillor Community Grant Scheme, £270,000, Climate Action Fund, £100,000, and Community Infrastructure Levy Grant, £750,000. The first scheme to open will be the Everyone Active Grant, launching in March. The Council is hosting a series of drop-in events across the district in the coming months.
Bookshop owner chuffed to bits with nomination. The owner of Wallingford Bookshop said she is chuffed with an award nomination for the shop in the Independent Bookshop of the Year Awards. Helen Longworth, who has owned and run the hugely popular bookshop in St Martin Street for nearly 4 years, said she and her team feel lucky to be in a town which loves reading, as they're put up for the award for the third time. Wallingford Bookshop is one of two regional finalists nominees in Oxfordshire, alongside Mostly Books in Abingdon, and a total of 10 across the South East competing for the crown in this corner of the UK. The British Book Awards 2026 Independent Bookshop of the Year has put forward its largest ever cohort, 76 independent shops nationwide since it began in 1990. Ms Longworth said, "We do feel absolutely chuffed to bits that we've even made it as far as we have. The fact that the awards are growing in a really positive thing for independent bookshops. Regional and county winners of the Independent Bookshop of the Year title will be announced on Tuesday, March the 10th. And the article is accompanied by a colour photograph of two of the team that run the Wallingford Bookshop, Nikki Alfonso and Fiona Thompson-Turr.
Major disruption in town as a pipe bursts. People have described traffic chaos and disruption to residents and businesses in Wallingford after a pipe burst in a busy town centre road. The pipe in St John's Road burst on Tuesday of last week, leaving people in the area without any water or with low water pressure. Thames Water sent a team out to deal with the emergency incident, and while the water supply issues were stemmed the same day, the damaged infrastructure required a lengthier fix. Traffic control three-way lights were installed as a large hole was dug to access and repair the pipe, with water intentionally turned off again later in the week to enable the works to be completed. Pamela Barry, who runs the coffee shop in St John's Road, described how disappointed she was that work from the water company were back on the road outside her business. "They're back," she said. "They dug a huge hole again with three-way traffic lights, which malfunctioned at one point and were stuck on permanent red. It was dangerous as people were just guessing and making a dash for it. They turned the water off on Thursday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. They did let me know the previous day, so I stocked up with what I could and asked them to deliver bottles of water to me, as obviously I needed hot water to clean. So I was using my urn, which had to be refilled. I put a post out on social media to ask people to still pop up and grab a coffee. The queues haven't been too long to get through the roadworks, but it is a major through road in the town." One resident who did not wish to be named said, "I live immediately out beside the site of the works and have been directly affected. He described the water supply being shut off twice on Tuesday at about 11 for the rest of the day until 8:30, and again on Thursday, and disruption from noisy roadworks which started about 6:15 a.m. on Saturday, involving diggers and heavy machinery. This caused significant disturbance at an unusually early hour for a residential street." The St John's Road residents added, "There has already been a great deal of disruption in this area over the past year and a half due to utility works, sometimes by third-party contractors. However, this week's handling by Thames Water has been particularly poor in terms of communication and consideration for residents." A spokesperson for Thames Water said, "These works are now complete. We appreciate these works cause disruption to residents and are grateful for their patience while our engineers carry out these essential repairs. This latest, almost week-long disruption was just the latest in a series of roadworks which have plagued St John's Road, which faced a similar situation in January last year when it burst a pressurised foul water sewage and saw the same stretch of road closed."
Governors to ensure county voices heard. Two new members have been elected to represent Oxfordshire on the Council of Governors for South Central Ambulance Service, SCAS, NHS Foundation Trust. Marina Bang and Adrian Black will formally begin their roles at the next Council of Governors meeting on March the 4th, following elections that concluded on February the 24th. The Council of Governors is responsible for representing the views of patients, staff and the public. It helps to ensure the Trust addresses the needs of the communities it serves. Professor Sir Keith Willett, Chairman of SCAS, praised the importance of the role. He said, "Governors play an essential role in supporting the Trust and ensuring the voices of our communities are heard. Congratulations to the newly elected governors. I look forward to welcoming them into the Trust and working with them to improve the services we provide. Thank you also to everyone else who stood for election and those who voted. Ms. Bang and Mr. Black are among 11 newly elected governors from across the SCAS area. The council includes representatives from neighbouring regions. These include Berkshire, Hampshire, the rest of England and Wales, and other public, staff and community constituencies.
Accessible Boat Club secures lottery funding. An Accessible Boat Club has secured more than £13,000 in funding. Wallingford Accessible Boat Club, WABC, has been awarded £13,273 from the National Lottery Community Fund to support its work. WABC Chairman John Jenkins, MBE, said, "We are incredibly grateful to National Lottery players for their support. This funding will make a real difference to our passengers and volunteers, helping us continue to provide life-enhancing experiences on the water for people of all abilities. The funding will help the club offer safe and accessible boating experiences for people of all abilities, supporting confidence building, independence and social interaction. WABC, a registered charity, operates a wheelchair accessible wheelie boat on the River Thames. The boat gives disabled and elderly passengers the chance to enjoy sightseeing, fishing and even steering the boat themselves. It is one of the only two accessible boat services on the Thames and the only one operating on the Upper Thames."
This article is accompanied by some five brightly coloured pictures of performers at the circus. Circus marking 25 years with a river-inspired spectacular. Circus Styles will bring a riverbank-inspired adventure to life under the Big Top this summer. Gifford's circus show, Waterfield, is coming to Oxfordshire as part of its tour with performances at Blenheim Palace from May the 8th to the 18th, Stoner Park near Henley from June the 25th to July the 6th, and Barrington near Burford from July the 9th until the 20th. The new production marks the company's 25th year on the road and promises to deliver Gifford's unique blend of theatre, comedy and traditional circus. Directed by Cal McChrystal, the longtime Gifford's collaborator known for his work on One Man, Two Governors and Cirque du Soleil's Humanity, Waterfield draws on inspiration from the rivers, hedgerows and wildlife of rural England. It unfolds like a living storybook filled with circus acts and characters inspired by classic British children's literature. Mr. McChrystal said, "We've poured our hearts into Waterfield, creating a show full of joys, thrills and theatrical wonder. It's a celebration of the countryside, of tradition and of a magical world. Each performance handcrafted, immersive and designed to delight audiences of all ages. The circus ring will come alive with a cast of international performers chosen for both their talent and storytelling. The 9-strong Ethiopian Addis Ababa troupe will showcase breathtaking hand vaulting and a dramatic double pole display. High above the ring, the Valencia Flyers, a third generation of Colombian circus troupes, will take on the Wheel of Death, a spinning, gravity-defying structure that promises to leave audiences on edge. Also joining the show are Italian knife-throwing and crossbow duo Elena and Giacomo Giustas, who will deliver a nail-biting act of precision and trust. Their daughter Jessica Giustas and her partner Sunny Cavenia will also take to the ring with a high-energy juggling routine. Other featured double acts include Olivia and Stefan, whose comedic chaos will entertain the crowds, and the Sienna sisters, who will perform an aerial display. Tickets for Gifford Circus in 2026 are now on sale at giffordcircus.com.
MP, working toilets on trains is not a luxury. Didcot and Wantage MP Ollie Glover has challenged the government to improve the standard of rail travel, saying working toilets should not be considered a luxury. The Liberal Democrat transport spokesman made the case during the committee stage of the government's railways bill. He called for improvements in affordability, accessibility and efficiency and set out the party's vision for a passengers-first approach. He said the modern rail passenger quite rightly expects more than they often get, and onboard amenities are generally not subject to any form of compensation or provision should they not be available. It should no longer be considered a luxury to have functioning Wi-Fi or mobile phone signal so that people can be productive on the train. Toilets should be reliable, a seat should not be considered a luxury, a standard class ticket should not entitle one to a seat, and there should be adequate space for luggage, pushchairs, bicycles and so on. In so doing, we will make the rail offer more attractive to the travelling public and ensure that people do not have bad experiences. The Liberal Democrats tabled several amendments to the bill, including a comprehensive passengers charter. Other proposals included a rails to trails programme to convert disused railway lines into active travel routes and new rules on electronic audio devices on trains. The Railways Bill is expected to return to the House of Commons for its report stage in the coming weeks. And there's a small photograph of Ollie Glover accompanying this article.
Fly tipping hits record high with 109,000 incidents. Farmers are bearing the brunt of rising fly tipping. Newly released figures show a surge in illegal dumping in England, with rural land increasingly targeted by organised criminal groups. Councils in England recorded 1.26 million fly tipping incidents in 2024-25, a 9% increase on the previous year. In the South East, incidents rose by 7.2% to 109,000, with sharp increases in Berkshire, up 26%, Eastbourne up 53.6%, and Folkestone and Hythe up 33.8%. Tim Bamford, Regional Director for the Country Land and Business Association for Kent, Sussex, Surrey, Thames Valley, Hampshire, and the Isle of Wight, said, "Farmers and land managers have had enough. The countryside is increasingly being targeted by organised crime gangs, often violent, who know that rural areas are underpoliced and resourced. This data covers only public land, meaning the true scale of the problem on private property is likely far higher." Mr. Bamford said, "It's not just litter blotting the landscape, but tons of household and commercial waste, which can often be hazardous, even including asbestos and chemicals, endangering wildlife, livestock, crops, and the environment. We need to see penalties being enforced that better reflect the severity of the crime, and the seizure of vehicles must be the default penalty to send a clear signal that criminals will face real consequences if they are caught fly tipping."
Eye test leads to cancer diagnosis. A pensioner's sight has been saved after a routine eye check found she had cancer when the optician discovered a tumour growing behind her eye. Jacqueline Charles, 84, along with her husband and carer Bruce from Didcot, visited the Specsavers store in the town for their annual eye examination. In the weeks before the appointment, Mr. Charles had become concerned about a dark mark in the corner of his wife's left eye. But as it wasn't causing discomfort, the couple decided to wait until the routine appointment to get it checked. During the checkup, the senior optometrist, Rukina Bai, spotted the mark and was immediately concerned. The optometrist said, "After a quick glance, I knew something wasn't right, so called in my fellow optometrist to get their opinion. When they confirmed my suspicions, I referred Jacqueline to the hospital for urgent investigations." Mrs. Charles was referred for a biopsy and further tests at the John Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford, which revealed a tumour growing behind her left eye. Her husband said it all happened so quickly. To be told that our options were to leave the tumour and risk it spreading, or to remove the tumour along with her left eye, was just devastating. Further consultations introduced the couple to immunotherapy, a new and highly effective treatment that had only just recently become available. Although it comes with some side effects, it was decided that Mrs. Charles would try it in an attempt to save her vision. And since the treatment began in January, the tumour has shrunk significantly. Mrs. Charles returned to the Didcot store for her regular checkup in November. Optometrist Miss Bai said, "It is always lovely to see customers return, but particularly when they have been through so much. I can really see the improvement since I last saw Jacqueline, and I am so glad the treatment has been helping." Mr. Charles added, "I can't thank the team at Didcot Specsavers enough. Their fast action is the reason why Jacqueline still has her sight today. The compassion they showed us at such a tough time in our lives was just wonderful, and Roxana even called me a few weeks after our initial appointment to get an update on Jacqueline's consultation." The optometrist emphasised the importance of regular eye tests. Cases like Jacqueline's are rare, but they highlight how vital it is to keep up with routine eye examinations. We recommend regular eye examinations at least every 2 years, or more often if recommended by your optometrist, not just to check your vision, but to also ensure your eyes are healthy.
Safety recall is issued for popular toy. An urgent safety recall has been issued for a popular children's toy which may contain asbestos. The warning has been placed outside the J.G. Jones, former W.H. Smith, and Toys R Us in Corn Market Street, Oxford. A sign on the window says the Worm World product presents a risk to health, as the sand included in the set may be contaminated with a small quantity of asbestos. It adds, "Asbestos is a banned substance because it poses a risk to health even at low levels of exposure. The product does not meet the requirements of the General Product Safety Regulations 2005. The recall is issued specifically to My Living Worm World and no other Play Monster product. No reports of injuries or consumer incidents have been reported. The advice given is to stop using the product immediately, and if the product is filled with sand, to place it in a heavy-duty plastic bag, double tape it securely, and store out of reach from children. The product can then be returned to the place of purchase for a full refund. Affected items have the product number LW102C. Around 42,000 were sold between November 2022 and February 2026 for the Chinese-made toy. Scaffolding is wrapped around the city centre shop in Corn Market Street at the moment for maintenance works.
MP joins calls for Epstein inquiry. A County Member of Parliament, Ollie Glover, has backed calls for a public inquiry into Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's links with disgraced American financier Jeffrey Epstein. Liberal Democrat MPs forced a vote in Parliament to secure the release of documents relating to Andrew's 2001 appointment as UK Trade Envoy. The Liberal Democrat MP for Didcot and Wantage and Wallingford took part in the debate in the House of Commons, raising the need for full transparency to restore public trust in UK politics, as well as seeking justice for the victims, survivors and families affected by the crimes of convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein and his associates. Mr. Glover joined colleagues making the case for publishing documents to fully understand how the former prince was appointed and why, arguing this is a crucial step to hold the powerful to account and dismantle the systems allowing abuse of power. Mr. Glover and fellow Lib Dem MPs said, providing full transparency through the publication of relevant documents and criminal investigations will bring forth the trust that the public deserve from their political institutions. During the debate, Mr. Glover said, this whole Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor affair adds to that by making a very significant contribution to already severe erosion of trust in our politics and institutions. That is why we, the Liberal Democrats, are calling for a public inquiry into all aspects of UK and British citizen involvement with Jeffrey Epstein over many years. That inquiry would include, of course, taking account of police and criminal investigations, disclosure and publication of relevant documents. Business and Trade Minister Chris Bryant summed up the debate by thanking the Liberal Democrats for bringing this issue forward. He stated his support for full and timely transparency in relation to Andrew's trade envoy appointment, and a vote on the proposal was supported unanimously. Earlier this week, police confirmed they had left Royal Lodge in Windsor, Berkshire, after the former Prince Andrew, now known as Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor, was arrested. In a statement on Tuesday night, Thames Valley Police confirmed its searches in Berkshire in connection to its investigation into the offence of misconduct in public office have now ended. Thames Valley Police Assistant Chief Constable Oliver Wright said, officers have now left the location we have been searching in Berkshire. This concludes the search activity that commenced following our arrest of a man in his 60s from Norfolk on Thursday, February the 19th. We understand the significant public interest in this case and our investigation remains ongoing. Mr. Mountbatten-Windsor was arrested on suspicion of misconduct in public office, spending 11 hours in custody on his 66th birthday. This followed allegations he had shared sensitive information with Epstein during his time as the UK's trade envoy. The former prince has denied any wrongdoing over his links to convicted sex offender Epstein, but has not directly responded to the latest allegations.
There are just two public announcements today. One is Ronald Wayne Morris, who passed away peacefully on the 11th of February 2026, aged 68 years old. Devoted husband and a much-loved dad, granddad and great-granddad, he will be greatly missed by all his family and friends. Funeral service to take place at St Mary's Church, Childry, on Thursday the 12th of March 2026 at 1 p.m. Family flowers only, please, but donations, if desired, to Cancer Research at Oxford Hospital Charity, care of J. Godfrey and Son Funeral Services, 20 Gloucester Street, Farringdon, SN77HY. And the second one is for Peter Wood, who passed away on the 30th of January 2026, aged 72. He will be fondly remembered and greatly missed by his wife Carol, daughters Catherine and Alice, grandchildren Naomi and James, and friends around the world. Family flowers only. Donations, if desired, to TVAA and CTCU John Radcliffe Hospital, care of Chadwick's Funeral Services, Benson Lane, Cromarsh, Gifford.
Ewes now back in reach of safety after win. Matt Bloomfield believes that Oxford United's 2-1 win over West Bromwich Albion puts his side back within reach of championship safety. The Ewes head coach secured his first home win on Saturday thanks to first half goals from Stan Mills and Will Lancashire, ending a run of 7 games without victory. The clash was a crucial one to Oxford United's hopes of avoiding relegation. United gained a much-needed 3 points on the Baggies and are now only 3 points from safety in the league table. It's just a big relief, Bloomfield admitted. We wanted to get the first win at home. We wanted to share a great moment with our supporters. We felt like we needed a lift in terms of a league result, in terms of a result that really puts us back in touch, and it's really satisfying to get that today. I don't want to be boring, it's a great moment. I'm so proud to be head coach of this club, and to celebrate with our supporters at the end was just wonderful. We hope it's a springboard for more. We have to use this emotion and the feeling from it to drive ourselves forward, because there are going to be plenty of days like today where we're going to need to come away with the points, because if we want to do that, do what we want to do this season, we're going to need to win more games. The Ewes won 10 set pieces in the first half and scored both of their goals from dead ball scenarios. A header each from Mills and Lancashire meant the Yellows bore fruit from their opportunities. If we think back to the end of last season, there are a lot of games that were decided on set pieces, so we need to make sure we try and utilise those situations the best we possibly can, whilst trying to heighten our expected goals situation with open play opportunities, the Oxford boss analysed. It was really nice for the two boys, because Stan's a lad that I think has got massive potential, and we need to keep working with him to bring that out, and it's lovely to see him get his goal. Will as well. Will's going to the top. I've told you that before. I think he's brilliant. He's rounding off his game and he's a goal scorer, and for him to get his goal as well, great. Finally, a first home win for Bloomfield in the Oxford dugout. I feel at home here and I want to make a home for a long time. I'm here for results. I want to produce a team and be part of a football club that our supporters are proud of. And there's a photograph here of the match between Oxford United and West Bromwich Albion, with Oxford United's Kieran Brown's header. This is dated Thursday the 5th of March from the Benson Garden Club. Talk by Rachel de Tame, who is a regular presenter on Gardener's World and other shows, as well as the author of several gardening books and newspaper columns. To purchase tickets, £16 for visitors, £10 for members, email bensongardeningclub.weebly.com or buy from Derry's Den, 26 High Street, Benson. Admission by ticket only. And this event is Wallingford Stroke Club at Crowmarsh Village Hall. The Stroke Club welcomes new members. It offers a safe, welcoming space where stroke survivors and their families can connect, relax, and enjoy a few hours away from home. A varied programme of talks, music, quizzes, etc. meets on the second Wednesday of each month. And Moonrakers takes place at St Mary's Church, Long Wittenham. Enjoy an evening of Celtic and traditional music. This Oxford-based four-piece band have delighted audiences with a full range of songs from the Irish and Scottish traditions, as well as some contemporary and original material.
Okay, and lastly, just to mention, you may recall that a few weeks ago, Keith mentioned an oral history project currently being organised by the Wallingford Museum. We're pleased to announce that we will soon be able to share some of those recordings with you. To set the scene, what follows is an introductory interview between Keith and Margaret Pritchard. Margaret is the lady responsible for interviewing the Wallingford residents who are taking part in the project by sharing their memories of their early years. Over the coming weeks, we look forward to bringing you the voices and stories captured as part of this fascinating oral history collection. And that interview that Keith did is the next track, the next article following this one, and then following that are some articles from the monthly magazines. But for this week, for the paper, that concludes our recording. So thank you for listening, everybody, and goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Let me introduce you to Margaret, who is here to tell us about the Oral History Project, which is being undertaken under the auspices of Wallingford Museum. The reason we're telling you, our talking newspaper listeners, about this project is because over the coming weeks and months, we will be playing you recordings made for the oral history of Wallingford. But first of all, I'll ask Margaret to explain what the Oral History Project is.
Hello, thank you for introducing me. And the Oral History Project in Wallingford Museum is funded by Wallingford Museum and TWAS. It's oral history. We were asked to record oral history as part of the town's funding bid for the town hall to the lottery fund. Now the lottery fund has changed the goalposts and it doesn't need an oral history project anymore. But the museum are very, very pleased that we have one going. So we started about 2.5 years ago to begin to plan how this was going to work. And we began with a pilot project, and these are the recordings that we are giving to the Talking Newspaper. And Keith is going to serialise them because they're about an hour long, each one of them. And they are the memories of people who are now in their 80s, who remember their childhood in and around Wallingford, mostly during the Second World War. And they're very interesting because life has changed so much.
Thank you, Margaret. Can you give us an idea of what sort of experiences we can expect to hear about from the oral historians you've interviewed?
Well, it's been very interesting. One of them lives in the countryside and remembers being frightened by a bull. Another one remembers prisoners of war, German prisoners of war. They were working on the farms around Wallingford. Another one remembers that a prisoner of war taught him to box. Another one remembers that his parents hosted refugees. Another one hosted a family from the RAF, and he was a pilot and he was a dam buster. Another one remembers that they, what it was like in the town with Americans and Canadians based around the town during the Second World War. Another one remembers VE Day and what the town did to celebrate the end of the war. So there's a lot of wartime memories. There are also memories of the schools they went to, what the shops were like, and quite a lot more, which I can't bring to mind right now. This was a pilot project, and we've only interviewed 4 people for this to learn how to do oral history.
So how many local people are you planning to interview over the whole course of the project, and how long will the project last?
Well, we're on halfway through our second project now, and this one is called The Marketplace Speaks, and it's about Wallingford Town Marketplace and what it was like during the childhood of the people that we're interviewing, and to get a broad spectrum of interviewees. We are doing it according to five age ranges. So we are using age-based segmentation to form the picture of the change. And so we have people who were born between 1900 and 1945 are the traditionalists. And then there are the boomers, which you're probably very familiar with, born between 1946 and 1964. Then we have Generation X, people born between 1965 and 1976. Then there are the millenniums, born between 1977 and 1997. And the youngest ones are Generation Z, born after 1997. In this particular project, we're planning to interview 4 people from each of those age ranges, which will give us 20 interviews. Now, we found it very easy to find the older people because they're at home all day and very interested in giving their memories of what their earliest memories of the town, and some very interesting stories coming out from that. The younger people are more difficult to find because they're out at work. They're a bit short of time. So we've done a few. But we're still looking for people in the younger age ranges. I think. Have you got another question?
Yes, indeed. Finally, my final question. Our listeners will be privileged to be among the first people to hear these recorded stories. So how will the oral histories be made available to the wider public?
Well, as we were doing the recordings, we are actually putting them into a digital archive at the museum. All museums now have a problem with archiving because when we were learning to do this, we went to the British Library to do a course. And as you know, technology keeps changing. And oral histories that have been recorded in the past on tapes deteriorate. The machines deteriorate. So we are doing digital recordings. And they will be stored digitally in the museum. And people in the museum are currently transferring all the information that they have there over to digital. So it's a big undertaking being done at Wallingford Museum and probably in all the museums across the country. We've all got the same problem with deteriorating equipment. So once it's all done, it'll be a permanent resource and it'll be available for exhibitions, research, publications, education, lectures, broadcasting on the internet, and also the talking newspaper.
Good. Well, thank you very much, Margaret. We greatly look forward to hearing the experiences of local people, which will, I'm sure, trigger lots of memories for the listeners. Again, thank you very much.
Caring for someone living with dementia can be challenging. Dementia Oxfordshire will run a free 2-hour information session for family and unpaid carers from 2 to 4pm on Tuesday the 17th of March at Waterside Court Care Home in Wallingford. The session will help you understand more about dementia and strategies for supporting the person you love while looking after yourself. To find out more and to reserve a place, please email education@dementiaoxfordshire.org.uk or call 01865 410 210.
Next, we have some extracts from the My Vision newsletter. We hope you're having a good 2026 so far and are ready for what spring has to offer. And here is an extract from that newsletter. A message from Mark, our chief executive. I am constantly inspired by the people we work with. Everyone has a unique story to tell and a perspective we can all learn from. At My Vision, this inspiration has helped us grow a wide range of community-based activities and peer support sessions. These groups provide valuable opportunities to meet others, share experiences, feel inspired, and connect with your local community. You can find out more about our clubs and activities. Our greatest strength as an organisation is our community. By working together, we can better tackle the challenges faced by blind and visually impaired people across Oxfordshire. This Random Map magazine tells us next about the Thames Run. Entries are open for summer's hottest race, the Wallingford Thames Run 5K and 10K, which return on Sunday, the 7th of June. This much-loved race, now a firm fixture on the Oxfordshire running calendar, helps raise money for Cromarsh Gifford Primary School and the great local charity Styleacre, which supports local people with learning disabilities. Runners start at the school, head through quiet country roads and paths in Cromarsh, along the meadows and banks of the Thames Path into the heart of historic Wallingford and over the bridge back into Cromarsh. Lucky 10K runners get to do the whole course again, while 5K runners race a single loop. Anyone age 11 or over on race day can take part in the 5K with an age limit of 15 for the 10K. And for younger runners, a thrillingly messy colour dash is set to take place on the school field once the main event is done. Last year, 300 runners of all abilities crossed the finish line, helping the Thames Run Committee raise a much-needed £4,282 for the Cromarty Gifford Primary School PTA, as well as £800 for Stileacre. Race Director Josie Brettle says, "This year, we are hoping to welcome a bigger crowd of runners than ever before." The next item from Round and About magazine is entitled Ukes United. Wallingford's own Wally Ukes struck a celebratory note earlier this year as the musical group marked their third birthday with a lively party at the George Hotel. Almost 40 members gathered to toast the milestone, enjoying an evening that perfectly captured the group's joyful spirit. Highlights included a delightfully chaotic kazoo section, a music quiz, open mic performances, and naturally, plenty of birthday cake. For newer members, the evening was a reminder of what makes the group special. Deb Evans, who recently joined, said, "Thank you. A fun, enjoyable evening was had by all. I'm so glad I found Wally Ukes. It's such a great group, and I've been made to feel so very welcome." The new year has also provided an opportunity to reflect on a busy 12 months. Last year, Wally Ukes performed at much-loved local events, including Bunkfest, Wallingford Carnival, and a summer concert in the historic Castle Gardens. The group also brought festive cheer to the town centre in December, entertaining Christmas shoppers while raising funds for Wallingford Food Bank. Open to learners, returners and seasoned strummers alike, Wally Ukes pride themselves on being friendly, inclusive and peer-led. Weekly sessions take place 7:30 to 9:30 every Tuesday at the George Hotel in Wallingford. So now is the perfect time to pick up a ukulele and join them.
Again from the Benton Bulletin, this is Cromarsh Battle Farms. Winter months tend to be quieter on the farm, with not much in the way of fieldwork being carried out, especially in a wet winter like this year. We have started moving grain off the farm. Some of the milling wheat has gone to the Doves Farm Foods, which can be bought as Wessex Mill branded bags from local shops. Look out for the farm names on the back of the packets. We have also had feed wheat, barley and beans leave the farm for the next door pig farm, as well as use further afield. In autumn 2022, we hosted the National Hedge Laying Championships, and over the last two winters, we have been having more hedges laid around the farm. This has continued again this winter. We are hoping that across the three-year scheme, we will have laid approximately 1.5 kilometres of hedges. Not only do these hedges look great, they are also great for the local habitat and ecology, and help to regenerate older hedges. Around the farm, we have small areas that are planted in the spring to produce overwinter bird food for wild birds. At a number of these areas, over winter, we also take supplementary feed out twice a week to try and help fill the hunger gap for wild birds. We feed a mix of small seed and wheat on the ground or in bird feeders. The farm is a member of the Christmas Common Farm Cluster Group, which covers from Chalgrove to the north and Sonning to the south, and from Benson at the west to Hambledon in the east. The idea is that by collaboration with other adjacent landowners and farmers, the group can create a greater positive environmental impact on a larger scale. This winter, through the group, we've had two winter bird surveys carried out. Across the visits, the surveyors saw grey partridge, yellowhammer, linnet and skylarks, starlings and fieldfare. We also annually take part in the big farmland bird count with the help of Benson Area Nature Group,